It looks like nothing is happening. Nothing is happening, and then whoops, suddenly you're in a different world.
That is quite the opening line. A little ominous, if I'm being honest.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is Dr. Hartmut Nevin. He's the founder of Google's Quantum AI Lab. And for a really long time, whenever people talked about quantum computers breaking encryption, you know, the whole Q-Day scenario.
Right, the doomsday clock for cryptography.
Yeah, exactly. It's always this distant, almost sci-fi problem. It's always 20 years away. Just the kind of thing you worry about after you retire, basically.
Oh, absolutely. It was a physics problem, not a business problem. It was something for academics to argue about in basements while the rest of us just, you know, worried about quarterly earnings.
Right. But today we are doing a deep dive into a stack of documents that suggest that timeline has, well, it's completely collapsed. We are recording this on February 25th, 2026. And the message coming out of these sources is that the 20-year buffer is just gone.
It's completely gone. And I want to be very specific right up front about who we are talking to today. If you are a C-suite executive.
Like a CEO or a CISO.
Exactly. A CEO, CISO, CTO, especially in a mid-tier company or a hospital, this deep dive is specifically for you because the data suggests we aren't waiting for a miracle anymore. We're literally just waiting for the engineers to finish the wiring.
Yeah, and we have a really fascinating stack of sources to unpack this today.
Hmm.
I'm looking at a 7-page briefing involving Dr. Nevin and the VP of Engineering at Google. We've got peer-reviewed papers from Nature, published back in December 2024.
Plus those preprints from Google Quantum AI from May of last year, 2025.
Right. And we also have some very sobering risk assessments from the Global Risk Institute and the Federal Reserve. So the mission today is to connect these dots. We want to explain why the wait-and-see strategy, which has been the default for a lot of executives.
Almost all of them, honestly.
Yeah, why that is now actually a catastrophic risk strategy.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to walk through what the sources call the 5 threads of evidence that prove Q-Day is imminent.
So let's start with the big one. The moment the physics actually started working. The sources call this the physics is done moment.
That's a bold claim. Physics is done.
It is, but it's critical context. To understand where we are right now, you really have to understand where we've been. For 30 years, ever since Peter Shor came up with the math in 1995 that proved a quantum computer could theoretically break encryption.
Shor's algorithm.
Right. The problem hasn't been the math. The math was solid. The problem has always been the noise.
Noise. Like static on a radio.
In a way, yeah. But much more destructive. Quantum information is incredibly fragile. We are talking about qubits, quantum bits that exist in this delicate state of superposition. They are trying to be a zero and a one at the exact same time.
Which the universe apparently hates.
The universe absolutely hates it. Thermal fluctuations, stray electromagnetic waves, even cosmic rays hitting the physical chip. Literally anything can flip a qubit and ruin the entire calculation.
So it's not just static on the line. It's like the line is actively trying to scramble your message while you're talking.
Exactly. So for decades, the skeptics looked at this and said, well, you'll never build a machine big enough because the errors will pile up faster than you can ever correct them. It was like trying to build a house of cards in a wind tunnel. You put one card up, the wind blows it down.
You try to build a second story and the whole thing just collapses.
Precisely. But that changed.
That changed in December 2024. That was the real turning point when Google unveiled the Willow chip.
Right, the Willow chip.
This was published in Nature. Can you walk us through what they actually did there? Because the sources say this was the first proof of below-threshold error correction. What does that actually mean for the non-physicists listening?
So let's use an analogy. Imagine you're trying to send a critical message to a friend, but the phone line is terrible, full of static. If you just shout the message once, they probably won't understand it.
Right. They'll miss half the words.
So what do? You shout it 3 times or 5 times. You use redundancy. In classical computing, that's super easy. If you send the bit 3 times, the computer can look at them and say, okay, 2 of them were ones and 1 was a 0. So the actual message is probably a 1.
Yep, majority rules.
Yeah.
The redundancy helps filter out the noise.
In classical computing, yes. But in quantum, historically, it was the exact opposite. Because every qubit adds more physical hardware, and every piece of hardware is susceptible to that wind tunnel of noise we talked about. Adding more qubits usually meant adding more noise.
Oh, I see.
It was like shouting the message 5 times, but every time you shouted, the static on the line got 10 times louder.
Which is obviously a total dead end if you need a massive machine to break encryption. You can't build a supercomputer if making it bigger makes it dumber.
Exactly. It was a paradox. But with the Willow chip, Google did an experiment where they scaled up using a specific error correction technique called surface codes. They started with a grid of encoded qubits that was 3x3, a very small grid.
Okay.
Then they made it 5x5, then 7x7.
And normally, based on the last 30 years of history, you'd expect way more errors as that grid got bigger.
Correct. But on the Willow chip, the opposite happened. With each increase in size, the logical error rate was cut in half.
Cut in half, just by making it bigger.
Exponential suppression. That is the magic phrase straight from the Nature paper. They proved that if you add more physical resources, the machine actually gets more reliable, not less. They effectively turned off the wind tunnel.
So, referring back to Nevin's point in the briefing, this was the big aha moment.
Nevin was really explicit about this. He said, and I'm paraphrasing a bit here, that the community breathed a massive sigh of relief. Because this proved the physics actually works. We don't need to discover some new exotic particle. We don't need to rewrite the fundamental laws of quantum mechanics. The primary blocker, the noise problem, is fundamentally solved.
So if the physics is solved, what's actually left?
Engineering. Nevin calls it copy-paste engineering. It's no longer a question of scientific discovery. It's a question of manufacturing. It's a modular replication. You have the working block, the error-corrected logical qubit. Now you just need to build a whole lot of them and wire them together.
That sounds dangerously simple. Just copy-paste it.
Well, it's definitely not easy. It's incredibly hard engineering. We're talking about extreme cryogenics, complex control wiring, massive-scale integration. But the key is that it's a known path.
Right.
Think of the Wright brothers. Before Kitty Hawk, flight was a theoretical physics question. Could a heavier-than-air machine generate lift? There were plenty of very smart people who said, absolutely not.
Right. Lord Kelvin famously said it was impossible.
Exactly. But once they flew, even for just those few seconds, the physics question was definitively answered. Building a 747 50 years later wasn't about rediscovering lift. It was about scaling engines, materials, and safety systems. Google is basically saying Willow was their Kitty Hawk. The physics is done. Now they're just building the 747.
And that leads us directly into why this is moving so incredibly fast. Because if it's just engineering, we usually think of progress as, you know, linear. We make the chip a little better, a little faster each year. But Nevin brings up this concept called Nevin's Law.
Yes. And this is where human intuition totally fails us. We are terrible at understanding exponential growth. We evolved to understand linear threats, a lion running at us across the savannah. We didn't evolve to understand compound interest or viral spread.
I mean, we're fairly used to Moore's Law by now, right? Chips get twice as fast every 18 months or so.
True, but that's a single exponential curve. It's fast, but it's still relatively predictable. Nevin's Law describes doubly exponential growth.
Doubly exponential. I think for a lot of people, that just sounds like a fancy way of saying really fast. But break that down for me mathematically. What does that actually look like?
Okay, let's visualize it. Moore's law, single exponential is like 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. It curves up smoothly. Nevin's law is growth by powers of 2.
Okay, so give me the actual numbers on that.
Step 1 is 4. Step 2 is 16. Step 3 is 256. Step 4 is 65,536.
Whoa. Okay, that is quite a jump from 256.
But wait, for step 5, the next number in that sequence is 2 to the power of 65,536.
What is that even?
That is a number with roughly 20,000 digits.
20,000 digits. That's not just a jump. That's like a universe-breaking number.
Exactly. It goes from totally manageable to godlike scale in essentially 2 steps.
Why does quantum scale like that? Why doesn't it just follow Moore's law?
It's a combination of 2 distinct factors compounding on each other. First, you have the inherent advantage of quantum states themselves. If you have a certain number of qubits, let's call it n, you can represent 2 to the power of n states simultaneously. That's already exponential right out of the gate.
Right.
But then you're also improving the hardware itself, the qubit counts, and the error rates at an exponential pace.
So you're compounding an exponentially powerful technology with exponential manufacturing improvements.
Precisely. And that mathematical reality explains the quote we started with. It looks like nothing is happening, and then whoops.
Whoops moment.
That's the absolute trap of doubly exponential growth. On a graph, it looks flat for a very long time. It just hovers near zero. You look at it and say, quantum computers are toys. They can't do anything useful. And then in literally one development cycle, it creates a vertical spike that just shoots completely off the chart.
And if you're a CEO and you're looking at that flat line today, you're thinking, I have plenty of time.
Great. You're prioritizing other fryers. You're saying, let's worry about AI right now. Let's worry about supply chain disruptions. Let's worry about inflation. But Nevin's whole point is that by the time the line visibly spikes, it's already over. If you wait for the threat to be obvious, you have already lost. A transition happens virtually overnight.
Okay, so that's the hardware side of the equation. We have the Willow breakthrough, and we have this terrifying scaling law. But there's another thread here in the sources that really surprised me. It's not just that the computers are getting physically stronger. The math required to break the codes is actually getting weaker.
Yes, this is the Gidney factor. And honestly, this might be the most underreported part of the entire Q-Day story.
We're talking about Craig Gidney, a researcher from Google Quantum AI.
Correct. So let's take a step back. To break RSA encryption, which is what protects pretty much everything right now, from your online bank account to secure hospital patient records, you need to run that math we mentioned earlier, Shor's algorithm.
Right, from 1995.
For years, researchers have been estimating how many physical qubits you'd actually need to build a computer capable of running Shor's algorithm against a standard 2048-bit RSA key.
And what were the historical numbers on that?
Back in 2012, the accepted estimate was roughly 1 billion physical qubits.
1 billion. I mean, that sounds impossible.
It effectively was impossible. If you need a billion qubits, considering the cryogenics and the wiring, you're talking about a machine the size of a football stadium, and it would consume the power of a small country. So everyone felt incredibly safe. Security experts looked at that 1 billion number and said, yeah, theoretically possible, but practically, no way.
But then the goalposts moved.
Then the algorithms got better, much better. By 2019, Craig Gidney and a colleague named Ekero published a paper estimating they could do the exact same job with 20 million noisy qubits.
Wait, we went from 1 billion to 20 million. That's a 50x reduction in difficulty.
It is a massive drop. But to be fair, 20 million is still a lot. For context, the Willow chip has 105 qubits. So 20 million still feels far away. It still feels like a decades away kind of problem.
Okay, I can see how people would still feel relaxed about 20 million.
But then came May 2025, just last year. Craig Gidney published a preprint that completely shocked the cryptography industry. He showed that with new algorithmic optimizations, you could factor RSA 2048 with under 1 million noisy qubits.
Under 1 million. So we went from 1 billion down to 20 million, down to 1 million. That's a 1,000x reduction in difficulty in just over a decade.
And a 95% reduction in just the last 6 years alone. And here is the really key takeaway for the executives listening. This didn't happen because the hardware got better. This happened entirely because the math got smarter.
What specifically changed in the math? The source documents mention some pretty technical terms here. Approximate residue arithmetic. Magic state cultivation.
I won't bore you with the dense blackboard math, but essentially Gidney found clever shortcuts. Approximate residue arithmetic basically allows the computer to do its internal calculations with slightly less precision, but still guarantee the exact right answer at the very end. That saves massive amounts of working memory.
Oh, I see. It's like doing heavy math in your head by rounding the numbers as you go, but knowing exactly how to correct for the rounding error at the final step.
Exactly. It's incredibly efficient. And magic state cultivation, this one, is really fascinating. In quantum computing, certain logical operations are really, really expensive. They take a lot of physical resources just to clean up and verify. Gidney found a way to cultivate these specific states much more efficiently.
So it's basically software optimization.
Precisely. It's like figuring out a way to compress a massive 4K video file so it streams perfectly smoothly on a slow 3G connection. Gidney compressed the fundamental resource requirements for breaking encryption. He made the job 1,000 times easier for the hardware team.
And this is where the timeline collision really happens, right? Because we have Nevin saying on the record that Google wants to build a machine with 1 million qubits. And we have Gidney saying you only need 1 million qubits to break RSA.
That is the exact point of convergence. Nevin stated in a Google Zeitgeist interview that their explicit roadmap target is to build a machine with roughly 1 million physical qubits. He calls it their end of the decade target. Roughly 2029.
So Google is building exactly the machine that Google's own researchers say is perfectly sized to break the code.
And they are aiming to finish building it in about 3 years.
That puts a very specific, terrifying date on the calendar, 2029.
And that's if nothing else goes wrong, or goes right, depending on your perspective. Think about it. If an AI designs an even better algorithm next month, that 1 million number could drop to 500,000.
Wow. I prefer security to not be contingent on progress being slow. That's the direct Gidney quote from his 2025 paper.
It's a profound statement, isn't it? As a security professional or as a CEO, you cannot bet your company's survival on the hope that Google's engineers will fail. You cannot bet your entire career on the hope that the math has somehow hit a wall. History shows us over and over that progress accelerates. It doesn't slow down.
Okay, so let's pause here and look directly at the listener. They might be sitting there thinking, okay, 2029, that's still 3 years away. I can worry about this in 2028. I have quarterly revenue targets to hit right now today.
That is the single most dangerous thought an executive can possibly have right now. If you think you have 3 years, you are already dead in the water.
Why? Lay it out for them.
Because of HNDL, Harvest Now, Decrypt Later.
We see this acronym pop up a lot in the Federal Reserve documents.
We do. The Federal Reserve released an analysis in 2025 calling HNDL a present, active, and in some circumstances, unavoidable threat.
Present and active, meaning it's happening today as we speak.
Right now. Think about the mindset of a sophisticated adversary. If you are a nation-state actor, China, Russia, whoever, or even a highly funded organized crime syndicate, you read the same papers we do, you know Q-Day is coming, you know that in 2029 you will have the master key to unlock everything.
Yeah.
So what do you do today?
You start stealing the locked boxes.
Exactly. You scrape absolutely everything you can get your hands on. You intercept encrypted internet traffic. You steal database backups. You exfiltrate encrypted emails.
But it's all encrypted. They can't read a word of it. It's just gibberish to them
right
now.
They can't read it today. That's the hardest part. So they just store it. Storage is incredibly cheap. They put it on hard drives in massive sprawling data centers, and they sit on it. The second Q-Day hits, whether that's 2029 or 2030, they just feed all that stored data into the quantum computer. The encryption shatters instantly, and everything they stole in 2026 becomes perfectly readable, plain text.
This is exactly why we mentioned hospitals specifically in the intro. Because for a generic retailer, maybe this isn't quite as scary.
Well, let's play that out. If I hack a retailer and steal your credit card number today and I decrypt it in 4 years, who really cares?
Right, I've probably changed my card 5 times by then anyway. The data has expired.
Exactly. It has a very short shelf life. But what if I steal your genomic data? What if I steal your diagnosis history? Your psychiatric records?
That data doesn't change.
Your DNA never changes. That data is highly sensitive for your entire life and probably your children's lives as well, since it identifies your lineage.
So if a hospital loses an encrypted database today, in February 2026...
They haven't just lost a scrambled file that they can shrug off. They have effectively leaked the private, permanent medical history of every single patient to a future adversary. The breach has already happened. The damage is just time delayed.
That is genuinely terrifying. And it changes the legal and liability landscape completely.
It totally rewrites it.
Yep.
Imagine the class action lawsuits in 2030. You can't stand in front of regulators or a judge and say, oh, but Your Honor, it was encrypted with RSA 2048 at the time, so we were compliant. The regulators know right now that RSA 2048 is about to be obsolete. Legal negligence is all about foreseeability, and the experts are literally screaming from the rooftops that this is foreseeable today.
Speaking of regulators, the briefing stack mentions NIST. The National Institute of Standards and Technology. They're usually pretty conservative, right? They aren't exactly known for being alarmist.
Very conservative. They intentionally move slowly and methodically. They are the global gold standard for technical caution. But look at their published timeline. In November 2024, they released an official recommendation to deprecate RSA after 2030 and absolutely disallow it entirely by 2035.
Okay, so NIST is saying 2030. But Google is implying 2029.
The window is firmly shut. If the government, which usually lags behind cutting-edge technology by at least a decade, is telling you 2030 is the drop-dead date, and the tech companies actually building the hardware are aiming for 2029, you have zero margin for error.
And enterprise migration takes real time. You can't just flip a master switch in IT.
Not even close. Think about how long it took the banking industry to move from magnetic-stripe credit cards to the chip standard.
Oh, it took years.
Nearly a decade of coordinated effort. And that was just physical hardware that fits in your wallet. With Q-Day, we are talking about replacing the foundational cryptographic trust layer of the entire internet. We are talking about ripping out deep, embedded legacy code.
So let's pivot directly to the call to action. We've established the threat. We've established the timeline. If I'm a CISO listening to this on my commute, and I'm realizing that my wait-and-see strategy is dead on arrival, what do I actually do when I get to the office? The sources outline a very strategic plan here.
They do. And it moves way beyond just awareness. Executives know quantum is coming. They read the headlines. What they need to know is how to actually manage the transition. The very first step, and admittedly the most painful one, is cryptographic inventory.
Cryptographic inventory. Sounds like checking the warehouse for boxes.
It is, but you're checking for code. The harsh reality is most mid-tier companies do not actually know where all their encryption lives. It's not just sitting neatly in one central security module.
Where is it hiding then?
It's everywhere. It's hard-coded into custom legacy applications from 10 years ago by a developer who doesn't even work there anymore. It's buried deep inside third-party libraries your team downloaded from GitHub. It's hardwired into the firmware of the IoT devices sitting in the hospital rooms.
And obviously, you can't patch what you can't find.
Exactly. If you don't know that a specific vital heart rate monitor on the fourth floor uses a legacy RSA key exchange to talk to your central server, you're going to be totally vulnerable. So step one is deploying automated tools to scan your entire digital environment and map every single instance of cryptography. You need a complete map of the battlefield before you can fight.
Okay. Step one is find the crypto. What is step two?
Risk prioritization. Because you cannot fix everything at once. The scale is just too big. You have to filter everything you found in step one by two key variables, data sensitivity and data shelf life.
Okay, walk me through applying those variables.
We touched on this with the credit card versus DNA example earlier. If you have data that expires in 2 days, like a website session token or a temporary password, you don't need to prioritize migrating that right now. RSA is still fine for that temporary data today.
Because even if an adversary harvests it today, it's completely useless to them when they finally decrypt it in 2029.
Correct. But if you have proprietary trade secrets, unredacted board meeting minutes, patient medical records, or 30-year defense contracts data that will still be highly valuable or damaging in 5 to 10 years, that is your code red priority. You need to migrate those specific data flows to post-quantum cryptography, or PQC, immediately.
Right, PQC. These are the new algorithms that NIST has been standardizing, right?
Yeah.
Things like MLChem and MLDSA.
Yes. And just to be totally clear for the audience, these aren't quantum algorithms themselves. You don't need a quantum computer to run them. These are classical math problems that are just fundamentally really, really hard for both classical and quantum computers to solve. They don't rely on factoring large numbers, so Shor's algorithm just doesn't work on them at all.
So we are basically fighting advanced math with different, better math.
Exactly. It's an algorithmic shield against an algorithmic sword.
Okay. So step three in the source documents focuses heavily on the supply chain. This seems critical because, let's face it, most companies don't write their own encryption code from scratch anyway.
This is exactly where executives actually have real leverage. You might not have the engineering budget to recode your own software stack, but you pay millions to vendors who do. You need to start asking every single software vendor you use a very direct question. What is your concrete PQC roadmap?
And if the vendor just replies, we're actively watching the space.
That is the wrong answer. That essentially means we haven't started and we have no plan. You need to demand a timeline. You need to know exactly when they are integrating the final NIST standards into the products you buy. And internally, you need to start allocating budget for crypto agility.
Crypto agility, that's a key concept highlighted across all the papers. Explain what that means in practice.
In the past, encryption was static. You baked it into the software architecture and you mostly forgot about it. Future systems need to be agile, meaning you design the architecture so you can swap out the underlying encryption standard without breaking the whole application.
Kind of like changing a tire while the car is still moving.
Or at least having a car designed so the wheels use standard bolts and can be changed in a pit stop easily. Look, if a new mathematical vulnerability is found in one of the new PQC standards, which is highly possible, by the way, math is tricky. You need to be able to patch it and swap to a different algorithm in days, not years. You simply cannot afford to be locked into a hard-coded algorithm anymore.
Listening to all this, it really seems like this is shifting rapidly from an IT ticket that gets buried in a queue to a core boardroom issue.
It has to. This is a fundamental business continuity issue. If your encryption breaks, your entire business stops. Your digital trust completely evaporates. It's not just a tech thing for the engineers to figure out. It's an existential corporate risk. If you are a hospital network and you can't technically guarantee patient privacy anymore, you are fundamentally out of business.
Let's summarize where we are. We've covered a massive amount of ground today. The sources highlight five distinct threads of evidence driving this timeline. Let's quickly recap those for the listener who wants the clear elevator pitch to take to their next board meeting.
Okay, thread one is hardware, the physics is done moment. The Google Willow chip proved below-threshold error correction actually works. The fundamental physical barrier is broken.
Thread two is Nevin's Law, that doubly exponential growth curve. The computing power isn't just growing linearly, it's spiking vertically.
Thread three is algorithms, the Gidney factor. We went from needing 1 billion noisy qubits to under 1 million. Algorithmic goalposts moved drastically closer to us by a factor of 1,000.
Thread four is expert consensus. Look at the risk assessments. Every single year, the Global Risk Institute surveys show security experts getting significantly more confident that Q-Day is coming sooner rather than later.
And finally, thread five is government action. NIST, the NSA, the Federal Reserve, they are all publishing guidance screaming at critical infrastructure to move now. When the slow-moving regulators are acting panicked, the free market really needs to listen.
It's an incredibly compelling case. It's really hard to look at those five converging threads and seriously argue for a wait-and-see approach.
You really can't. The convergence is just too strong to ignore.
I want to end this deep dive with a final provocative thought for the listener. We've been putting a lot of weight on that 2029 date from Google, but Nevin talks about this sudden whoops moment. If we are truly seeing doubly exponential hardware growth, and if AI is now actively helping us design better quantum algorithms, is 2029 actually maybe a conservative estimate?
That is exactly the question that keeps me up at night. Human predictions are usually linear. We look at the past 5 years and project the same pace forward. But we are currently combining two exponential technologies here: artificial intelligence and quantum computing. AI is already helping Google design the physical quantum chips. AI is helping researchers like Gidney optimize the underlying math.
So they just feed off each other.
It's a massive feedback loop, a technological flywheel spinning faster and faster. It is entirely within the realm of possibility that we wake up one random Tuesday morning in 2027 or 2028, and a researcher announces an AI-discovered mathematical shortcut that drops the algorithm requirement down to just 100,000 qubits.
And suddenly, the hardware we already have sitting in labs today is dangerous.
Exactly. The whoops moment might not be a smooth telegraph transition over 3 years. It might be a sudden violent snap. And if you haven't even started your cryptographic inventory today, you won't have a prayer of being ready when that snap happens.
Well, on that intensely cheerful note, seriously though, thank you for unpacking all of this. It's heavy material, but it's definitely better for these executives to know what's coming.
Knowledge is only valuable if it's applied. Start the
You
inventory.
heard the expert. Start the inventory today. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.
Stay secure.